People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to My Seven Wonders. In ancient times, hanging gardens, great pyramids and other superstructures were celebrated as wonders of the world. And like days of the week and deadly sins, there were always seven of them. But what are the seven wonders you'd put on your personal list? That's the question I ask my guests in this podcast and on this stage. And the guest I'm asking today is a writer, she's a comedian, she's a thinker, she's an actor, she does all sorts of things. So please welcome... Well, it used to be from Scotland, but not anymore. Lynn Ferguson. Lynn. I'm awkward like that. I liked it in COVID times when nobody went near each other.
But you're so cuddly, Clive.
Oh, am I?
You are. Don't you think he's cuddly? Like, oh, I could just...
You've got to say yes to that just for the hell of it.
Don't you think he's cuddly?
No. I'm being heckled in the course of another person talking to the audience. So, Lynn, welcome. I mentioned you Scotland, from
Cumbernauld.
Which splits the difference between Edinburgh and Glasgow in a way, doesn't it?
So, it does.
But you now live somewhere west of that.
I live in Los Angeles, I know.
Yeah.
It's like Grangemouth when it rains, right? So this whole thing when people do that, I live in Los Angeles, and it's not glamorous.
I've never lived there. I have been there. I've worked there.
Whereabouts?
Oh God, we made some Whose Line It Anyway. We used to program Whose Lines Anyway, and there was it was becoming an American series. So I was doing the last one of the British series, and then we went and made, I don't know, we made it there in some film studio.
Did they waste it? I bet they wasted it.
No, sir, it's been fine. The only thing was when you're meeting people and say, "Oh, who's you?" And then, "Who are you?" "Oh, I'm Clive Anderson. I present the British series." And there was nobody who's interested in me from the American side. So the guy who produced it here, he's produced it in America. He did it on one network, and then he's done it on another network. So consider we start. This is not the show. This is me chatting about myself. You're not supposed to be interviewing me. So Whose Lines Anyway? Dan Patterson invented. We did it on Radio 4. Then we did it on Channel 4 here. Then he did it on ABC, and then he did it on CW Network, whatever that is, which I think that's just come to...
I didn't know that. I actually thought that it was American and then it came here.
No. Wow. But he always liked American improvisers, so we always had quite a lot of Americans.
You know, I am actually technically an American.
Yeah.
Like, I've got an American passport and everything. Yeah. And I do like America, but they waste stuff.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big fan of The Chase. That nearly went on as one of my seven wonders.
The Chase? Right? Oh, right. That's a shame you didn't.
Well, because I love Bradley Walsh.
Yes.
He is almost as cuddly as you, right?
Well,
I
don't know, I'll get into that debate, but he's brilliant on that show,
he's
definitely.
He's brilliant in everything.
Yeah.
And he's not one of my seven wonders either.
All right.
But The Chase in America, they've put sort of pretty people on.
Yeah.
And then they do a thing where, like, when somebody wins, they go, woo, that. And you're like, stop that.
Yeah.
It's not that kind of thing. It's not for pretty people, The Chase.
I wasn't expecting to talk about The Chase, but the thing that amuses me about that, they obviously set it up to be these ferocious chasers and are giving them really a hard time.
Yeah.
And they can't quite go through with it, really.
No.
Even the ones who try it, it's clearly just a bit of a laugh. And it's a strange thing. Do the chasers... Do they have like a budget that they mustn't waste, or does it matter to them whether they win or not? Because it's a rather cruel job.
We could do an expose documentary, you and me,
go on to Celebrity Chase. You could be a contestant.
I can't do quiz shows because I can't remember nouns Like, if you say to me, who was the person who did that thing, I'll be like, oh, yeah, man, that's thing me. You know, yeah, weak. Like,
yes,
that.
No, I know. I have the which same problem. You, but are we getting old or is it...
I don't know.
Yeah.
In America, I tell people I'm speaking the Gaelic, though. And I get away with it. I go, oh, no, that's
name.
The thing me. And yeah, they're like, oh, is that the Gaelic? And I'm like, yeah, listen out for it.
Yeah, Gaelic's big in Cumbernauld, isn't it? Yes.
It is.
Yes. No. Now look, but you're here in Edinburgh. You've flown in from LA to do this show, but you've probably got your own show too. What's that called?
It's Storyland. It's called Storyland, and it's on at the Gilded Balloon. And I started doing it last year, and it was kind of a hybrid chat show thing, because mm-hmm. I have a thing about when you come to Edinburgh, it should be an interesting thing that you do. Like, I like it to be unusual.
Yeah.
So it was part chat show, and you were on it last year, and you sculpted the show for me. Hi, you, Clive, you did. Don't you be frightened when I say sculpted.
Because sculpted's a good thing, isn't it? Sculpted.
Oh, no, it was
yes,
a brilliant yes, thing, yeah. Because... because I was doing, like, story, telling my stories and doing stories and all that thing. And then it came to a bit where I would invite someone on and I would do this exercise where you could tell a story about what someone's life is like by asking them a question. And it was Clive, and I asked him to come on, and he went, don't want to come on. We just want to hear the end of the show. Yeah. Just do the show. So yeah, then this year it is a solo show, and right, it is just about story and what people are and what we are as people.
Well, we've sort of accidentally gone to what is really your fifth wonder. Well, but let's stay there while we're okay. There. So stories is one of your wonders.
Absolutely love story. And I absolutely love story from hearing stories from other people. I mean, I do believe that we are biologically meant to receive story.
Yeah.
Because, and that's why gossip and everything is like such a thing. But
what are you meaning by story? You mean a sort of factual account, but you can play around with it a bit, a curated facts to make it into more of an anecdote or something?
I think there's a thing with writing, as you'll know, where they do a character when you're writing or you're acting is what they say, what they do, and what other people say and do around them, yeah, right? And that's what I mean by story. And like, I believe that story is about the transfer of information from one person to another. So, like, for example, the first one, because I was thinking about that, because I thought he's going to ask me about what, give me an example. So, like, my great aunt, right, my aunt, my grand sister, she was in South Africa during the war, right?
Mm-hmm.
And during the war, and her husband was fighting those darn Nazis, and he ended up in a prison camp,
yeah,
and she had to come back from South Africa because everything was getting really bad. And on the boat back, she got torpedoed, right? Her and her daughter got torpedoed by a German U-boat. And it was just before Hitler had said, don't pick up survivors. And they did pick up survivors, this guy did. And so she got brought on the U-boat and then transferred to a ship. And in the transfer to the ship, they lost her six-year-old daughter, right? They never found her.
Oh.
And as a child, I was like, whoa. So that is a piece of information where immediately it's like it starts films in your own head where you're like, how does that feel? What would that be like? How would I handle it? And then we were sitting drinking a wee sherry one night, me and my auntie, and I said to her, when Johnny, her husband, came back from the war, what did you say? Did you talk about this child? And he went, and she said, we never mentioned it. We never talked of it again.
Yeah.
And what that did is it made me think about, like, you can understand the whole story of that scenario.
Yeah.
And I think when story is told beautifully, it allows you to see the world from a perspective that thankfully you don't have to actually enter into.
Yeah.
It's what makes me mad when we get the same kind of plasticine, you know, motorway sandwich story about refugees or whatever, where you're like, these are real people with real things that have happened to them. Like, they breathe the same air as us, and they're made up of the same molecules. And when we're fed this, you know, and this sort of vanilla story about them, then we do not understand their situation and we do not learn from it. So I love story because I believe that we were given the ability to receive it because it's meant to make the species survive.
But interesting, you've mentioned your great aunt and the tragedy and the whole thing about, and then you're obviously mentioning passing refugees.
Yeah.
In both examples, those are dreadful times that people are going through. But they and these stories that come out of it are so intense. But do you think everybody's got stories like that?
Totally.
Because those of us who've not had to fight
you
in a war.
You have got stories.
No, I know, but we haven't had to fight a war. We haven't had, to get into a boat to go across water. So in some ways, you're trying to avoid having to. I always say to my, well, they're grown-up children now, when something goes wrong on a holiday or something, so, no, this is great, you've got an anecdote now, because you had to sleep in a field because the hotel was there. Or you lost your passport, they're always doing, you've got a story. Whereas if you just go on a package tour and it's all lovely and you sat on the beach and you came home, nobody's interested in
that's true. My dad used to say this thing about any idiot can be a success, can be comfortable and look brilliant and a success, but it's not until you're dealing with something where you can look stupid or be challenged that you really know how strong you are.
Right. Now, I want to get onto your wonder. We've kind of covered stories, I think.
I could go on about stories for days.
Okay, if there's time, we'll do a bit more later. But your first wonder, all I get is just a one word or a couple of words on these, so I don't always know where it's going to go. But your first wonder of the world is chickens.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
And what's your problem with that?
I have no problem. You've got some very interesting, simple wonders coming up. I don't know where they're going to go. So chickens, I know chickens as a foodstuff. I don't know if that offends anybody who's vegan or vegetarian here. There are lots of chickens in the world. There's more chickens than any other bird, I know. But which aspect of chickens are you going for?
All chickens. Everything about chickens. Well, I keep chickens. I have chickens.
Yes.
We hatched chickens from eggs. And I have, currently, we have 9 chickens, 8 and a rooster, 2 of them died. There's a terrible thing that happens when your chicken dies.
Yes.
Which is people say, are you going to eat them? And I'm like, no. Do you say that about your granny? Oh, my granny's died. Are you going to eat her? No.
I suppose we don't say that.
No,
that's interesting.
My dog died. Yeah. Oh, really? Tasty. No, it's horrible, right?
Now, come on, be fair. Your dogs, I don't think, are tasty. And I wouldn't think grannies are either.
Chickens are.
They're made of meat, tasty.
But here's my point about chickens. They are, whenever you are unhappy, if you are ever unhappy, watch some chickens running. It's hilarious because their feet hit the ground like it's a surprise.
Yeah.
They're like, whoa, hello, what's this? But the other thing about the chickens, am I shouting at you? I feel like I'm quite shouty.
Am I shouting at you?
I'm just checking.
There's a certain way of talking in Scotland, even more so actually. In New York, if you go to New York, everybody's shouting the whole time. So if everybody calmed down and quietened down, we could go to a normal level.
True. Heathrow.
Yeah.
Like at Heathrow, you go LAX to then Heathrow and then I flew to Scotland. And I landed in London. Everybody's just angry at everybody. Oh. I was like, whoa. No, the point of chickens, right, they are a little ridiculous. But when you have chickens, there's a thing that you notice about the miracle of a chicken laying an egg. When you think of the size of a chicken and the size of an egg.
Yes.
And chickens lay that pretty much every day.
Yeah.
And that is sort of extraordinary. And I do find myself sometimes, particularly in the entertainment industry, where I look at people and I'm like, you could be as productive as a chicken if you tried.
Yes.
Like, you could make something every day if you wanted to, but you don't.
Does that apply to you as well as a writer? You know, you write a lot of stuff, but do you have times when you're the equivalent of egg-bound and you can't?
Oh, my God,
You can't get it out.
I was talking to someone.
I'm not saying it comes out that end when you're writing. But
See, it's chickens. That makes you do that, right? Yeah. You know, I do. I used to have a manager. I loved her very much because she was so rude. And she used to say to me, darling, that's not a first draft so much as it's some used pieces of paper.
Oh.
She was cruel. She was great, though, but she was cruel. No, I wouldn't say I'm that productive, really. I do stuff because I feel like I need to. And I don't mean that in a kind of like, if I don't, I'll explode. But strangely enough, I really do like people, which is unusual because I'm from Cumbernauld. And I think that there is something with making things, that if you can make stuff that lets people forget or have a picture of something else or takes them somewhere or gives them just half an hour where they can switch off from something that's bothering them, then I think there's a point to that. And that's as productive as laying an egg for me.
I wondered whether your attachment to chickens comes from the fact that you
chicken
had
run.
A role in Chicken Run, when you're Mac in
I
Chicken.
Am.
And then I thought, oh, I know there's Chicken Run 2 coming out.
Yeah.
And there's been a little bit of recasting. I wonder if this is going to be an awkward thing. But you're in Chicken Run 2
as
well.
I am in Chicken Run 2.
You've survived the
I've
the
also
cull.
Done a wee bit of piano playing in Chicken Run 2. I have the... I just love Aardman.
Yes.
Really, really, really love them. And all the things that you think you might think about Aardman are true.
Yeah.
Which is you go, are those just like guys that wear sweaters and do brilliant things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They are. And so we were like recording, because you work on it over quite a long period of time. And we were recording it during the pandemic. So like all over LA, everything was like completely closed down and people were like afraid. There was a lot of just people like, what's happening and, you know, losing everything. And then I'd go into a recording studio and everything was all wiped down and they were spraying the air, do you know, because your voice and everything.
Yeah.
And I'd go in there and then you would do something with the sole purpose of making people happy.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's like, yeah, there's a little bit of politics in it, but the way that they make those movies is to take you into something where it will make you laugh out loud.
So do you do the voices first and then they make the pictures to fit with that? Or do you see the pictures and have to fit your voices to it?
Both. It's weird. I sort of think this will make me sound like a complete arse, like nothing else has, but it's a bit like opera in a way.
Oh,
because
right.
It's
yeah,
all
you're
about
right.
Yeah, right. But it's about sound. So like you do like a raw line, you'll do the lines and then they'll animate around it. And then you have to look at, so for example, you do a line, but it might be that they're going to do it on a long shot rather than a close up.
Yeah.
So that'll change the way that you would do your voice according to what the thing was. And then it's so expensive to do this, kind of why I ended up that I'm additional material, because it's so expensive to do stop motion that literally if you add four extra words, that costs as much as a small car.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So like periodically I'd go in and I'd go, sweetie, Sam, who's just lovely, do you want me to save you a small car? And he's like, if you could.
Yes.
Right?
So you tidy up the lines.
You do,
them,
and then the last session that you do, which is the hardest one, it's always the one where I'm like, I hate this.
Yeah.
I love it, but it's hard because what you're doing is you're just putting down the sound of all of the kind of background action. So there's loads of falling over or swirling down. Like, do the noise, Clive. What do you think? What noise would you do as a Scottish chicken falling down a pole and landing on where your eggs come from?
Ah!
Right?
No. Ah, oh, no. What the?
You're in the wrong job.
Well,
you should be
you
there.
I don't know too much about me talking in these interviews, but I know a couple of people who write for those chicken films. And, you know, they used to write for me years ago in gags and things. And I'm always dropping heavy hints that he must need a voice of something like mine.
I think you would totally work for Aardman.
Well, the only time I've ever come close to doing a voice, if there was somebody making an animation and there was a devil and it was set in sort of afterlife.
Devil?
There was a devil. They said, we would like you to be the devil. So we made a little, like a pilot. We never went anywhere. So I went and I said, right, what sort of voice do you want me to do for the devil? And they said, no, your voice. just do how you speak. My voice sounds like the devil. Yes, that in our vision of the thing.
But was it a reasonable devil? Was it like kind of not like a big, whoa, satanic exorcist devil?
Well, but
it was like
just
a
like
kinda...
me. He was just apparently I am a devilish person, according to I once, sorry, it's another of my stories, but I was once interviewing Harry Shearer, you know, who does lots of the voices on The Simpsons. And I asked him some very naive questions because I'd never asked people what money they get for things, but it was just he happened to be doing a play in the Park Theatre, which I've just done a play there recently. It's a tiny little fringe theatre. So I just thought, well, which pays more? Playing in the Park Theatre or because I knew what he was getting because there'd been a huge strike on it. They got hundreds of thousands of pounds per episode. But my naive question would have said, oh, well, if you get £300,000, it's worth flying back to LA to do it. He said, I don't fly back to LA. I just go into a recording booth where I happen to be in the world. And he records several, sometimes people talking to each other. Yeah. And then he picks up his money. So,
well, you know, with Aardman, you don't record with anyone else. You're on your own. It's just singles.
All right. So you're still, and you're in.
I am.
The Mac, because there's been a little bit of controversy because Julia Sawalha has been edged aside and, all sorts of other people. Mel Gibson, I don't think, is in it again, is he?
I don't want to talk about the Mel Gibson.
I was going to ask you why he's not in it.
You know, when you just look at some... I was talking about this to my sister the other night. I said, you know, throughout life, you get these kind of forks in the road, right? Yeah. And there's the one where there's a fork in the road where you don't really want to take it, but it is when you're responsible and you're like, it's a bit of a challenge, I'll take it. And then there's the other one where you go, well, I could just stay how things are. I'll just be myself in that. And you go, well, that's a risky decision. And I feel like poor Mel Gibson has made a lot of, that's a decision for you.
Yeah.
Things, you know, wrong fork in the road.
Yeah. I think you were talking about his Scottish accent in Braveheart, obviously, but that's where he went wrong.
Not as bad as Christopher Lambert. When he did Bunny Heather, I was like, geez, have you got a rabbit? Right? My Bunny Heather. I'm like, what the hell is that?
There's a voice coaches, aren't there, to sort these things out? But sometimes it doesn't matter. Like
that's your celebrity, isn't it?
Dick Van Dyke's Cockney accent is it's fantastic, isn't it? He's such a great guy.
He is so good, though, Dick Van Dyke. I think you got to let him away with it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it was a weird version of... anyway, let's go on to your second wonder,
which
keeps us reasonably close to home. It's Millport on the Isle of Cumbrae.
Oh, I love Millport. Have you ever been there?
I haven't been there, but I did used to spend my summer holidays going to Bute and then also Ayrshire. We've looked at it. My father's pointed at it and described it. And
aren't you part Scottish?
Yes. So I've looked at Millport from, well, not particularly afar, but it's across that bit of the water.
The water.
And so now, why do you choose Millport? Did you used to go there?
I used to go there as a kid with my family. And for a while, my parents had a little room and kitchen there, a little flat. But I think that Millport is, like, there's a lot of Scotland that is just sort of perfect, you know. But because Scottish people tend to not big up themselves, you know, they're not like, oh, well, we're magic, then it kind of gets ignored. Yeah. The thing with Millport is it's the perfect size for a wee island and that you can, well, it's the Isle of Cumbrae. You can cycle round it, right? It's got some of the most beautiful beaches, right? Like Kames Bay is kind of mind-blowingly beautiful. It sells ice cream, pies. It's got a joke shop.
Yeah.
And there's a place that you can hire bikes. And it's like, it just seems to me that if you were doing a tick list of all the things that you would want on your holiday, Millport would be there.
Yeah.
It would just have all of it. I think the thing with Millport is it has everything in quite a condensed space and it's everything you could possibly want. You can even go looking for crabs if you wanted to, which is a terrible thing that I wish I'd not said, which is like that fork in the road because we're at
and
an
it's
Edinburgh
handy,
fringe.
And if you're starting in Glasgow, it's pretty handy to get to.
Just get a train
to
Largs and then you get on the ferry and then there you are. No, it's lovely.
It's a lovely place. Having said that, though, you wrote a radio series and possible TV as well about Millport and you were pretty... disparaging of it, weren't you?
I don't think I was disparaging. I mean, I am now, I guess, Millport people see me as Mel Gibson, right? Yes. They don't want me back there.
Well, your character referred to it as a scabby wee town on a scabby wee island.
Yeah.
So
well, there's
why
that.
Why would they take exception to that?
But I think that that's a Scottish
it's
thing.
A compliment, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, there is a sort of a...
Yeah.
The thing with Millport is that, yeah, this, the lead character is very disparaging about it, but all the other characters, the way that I wrote it is I wanted everybody to have their own catchphrase and not to have any characters that didn't matter.
Right.
And that, I do think with Millport that there's a little bit of everything that you're looking for, so there was that, yes. Right? But I wanted to write something about Scotland. It was very much of the time where it was difficult when people wrote about Scotland then because it was either Ochi the New and my Bonnie Heather and blah, 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 or it was all everybody shooting up round the corner and everything. And I was like, there's a quaint madness about yeah. Scotland where people are really interesting but a bit eccentric. Yeah. And one of the things that I think is inherently Scottish and runs through a Scottish vein is I must not boast about myself.
Yes.
I must diminish what is around me because I don't want anybody to think I'm English by yeah. being cocky.
Yes.
Right? So I wanted to write it. I don't know that I would write it the same way now, but in my own way, it was a compliment. Do you know? Because I don't know about you, Clive. Do you keep resentments?
Oh, a few, yes.
Because we tried to pilot it as a TV show for BBC, and Selena Scott wrote a big expose on my pilot in the Sunday Mail saying, I never watched it, but if it's anything like BBC Scotland does, it's terrible. And I have judged her harshly.
Oh, no.
Oh, for the rest of my life. In fact, right?
Yeah.
When in my last breath, as I'm lying on my deathbed,
yes.
It might be, fuck you, Selena Scott.
Oh, wow. This is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not one yes. of my wonders.
No, yeah. No. I did a TV series, a sort of reality series, I suppose, which was for dog. It was a dog series. You got yeah. Celebrities got a dog, a 2-year-old dog to train, and we got. I don't know if anyone saw it. It's the same sort of format as Strictly Come Dancing, and I wanted to call it Strictly Come Dogging, but I've already done a dogging joke, so I can't. Anyway, she won it. She won it because she deserved to because she had a really nasty dog. And over the course of the week, she trained it.
Well, I nearly said something there.
Yeah.
Right? Which was something about like meets like yeah. there, but I'm not yeah. going to say that.
Shall I tell you the story? Just to amuse you, yep. Because so week, whatever it was, 4 or 5, it was an agility week. And my dog was quite good at that. And her dog was big. And so they got a bit of a mess and she got knocked over. And then we had to come and sit on the... It was a live program, so you had to sit in the sort of the front row. And she was sitting there like this. And... Silly, don't worry. It's only 1 week. You won't get voted out of this. Yeah. So it's not that. As the dog knocked me over, my bra straps snapped.
Oh, my God.
And she had a see-through blouse on. So I'm sitting just like this to stop exposing myself on television.
Oh,
so I thought,
God.
This is what I went to television for.
Don't you
to me. I'm sitting next to somebody.
Don't you make me like her, Clive. Don't you make me like her.
She's a very good dog trainer.
Well,
she did very well.
I don't know what she's doing now, but I'm sure if it's anything like she's done before, it's going to be rubbish.
Well, that's very cruel if she hadn't seen your programme and then
no,
still...
No, that's what bothered me. I honestly do not mind somebody going, I don't like your stuff.
Yes, you do. But it's worse if they haven't seen it.
Don't because it comes back to the thing about story, right?
Yeah.
Because if you understand that nobody ever can or ever will see the world exactly as you do, which is story, right? Then the idea that anybody else on the planet would agree with you entirely is deluded, right? Because everybody sees things differently. So I don't mind if people get mad at me.
So you're a professional story writer in Millport. You've done lots of things on Radio 4, lots of things. And you've written jokes for your brother, Craig Ferguson, who's, I don't know what his career is now. It seems to go, he's always another bigger thing.
He's little bit like, he does my thing where he's like, he does something for a while. Well, or I do his thing, whatever, I have to be careful.
Yeah.
But like, that he'll do something for a while and then he's like, right, okay, I've done that. Now I want to do that.
Yeah.
It's just, he moves.
So he's on his late night talk show, big talk show king for several years, which is a big job in America. It's a big thing. So when you were growing up with you, and I know you've got others, brother and sister, were you very competitive in the sort of comedy way?
Not at all.
Make it a joke, crack another joke?
No, Matt, actually, he's a really, really lovely guy and quite, and not shy, but he's quite private, but he's lovely. And I would say that a lot of growing up, he kind of was my champion.
Yeah.
And again, that's another thing of a time, which is, you know, I do stuff like women in comedy and all that, but I it always sort of surprised me when people called me a woman, right? In that kind of, not that, I mean, it's fine, but, you know, like when, because my brother had this thing about, you're just funny, don't let anybody tell you otherwise, like go do your thing. So, no, he was always a bit of a champion of stuff. And I used to say to him things like, people judge women differently.
Yeah.
They do. And he's like, fuck them, just do it anyway. And that was
so
really
that was encouraging.
Oh, no, brilliant. Really brilliant.
But what was the step for you to be writing stuff for Radio 4? Now you're in LA. What's
well,
taking
I
you
got
there?
A job because of him. I went over to be a guest on the Late Show. And then, in fact, I went on to be a guest on the Late Show because I was over there on my holidays. And he said, come on the show.
Yeah.
And so then I went on the show, and then they asked me back to do the 9/11 show, and they took me out afterwards and said, we'd like you to come back and write for the show. And I said, no. I was like, no, I'm quite happy. And then I called my husband, and I said, do you know what they've done? They took me out for dinner, and they offered me a job. Wankers, right?
Yeah.
And he said, how much are they paying? And I told him, and he went, yeah, we're doing it. And then we moved, and that was...
But
that
he's
was
not. Your husband's not in a showbiz.
No, he was working for the Ministry of Defence at the time.
Right.
Yeah, which was interesting when you were talking about this stuff with Trump and all that earlier on, because actually that kind of secret stuff, having these secrets, if my husband had been caught with a top secret thing, it would be the jail.
Yes.
So even just the idea that a big orange Egypt can have boxes of stuff and then go, oh, I've pardoned myself.
But I can't, what does he want it for? What does he want all these secret documents?
Because he's an arse.
Well, but that's a very, anyway, it looks like, the way things are going, looks like he'll be both in the White House and the jailhouse at the same time. So it's exciting, isn't it?
He'll just be one big orange body, right?
Yes.
He'll be orange orange behind the orange. No.
So anyway, that's how many years ago is that you went to LA?
I went in 2008, and I had said to him, I agreed with my husband. I went, okay, we'll go for 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not directional that way. I make plans and, you know, it doesn't work out.
All right. So, and your brother's still there, so you see him?
He moves about.
Yes.
You know, he moves between places.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. I would love a lot of people to work in America for a bit. Because I think if they did, they would see how talented they were.
Yeah.
Right? I do. I'm not saying that Americans are not great, but I do really genuinely believe that there is a thing about definitely Scottish, for sure English and Welsh, and, you know, Irish are just lovely in a way, but there's a thing about that it's arrogant to allow yourself to be good at something, to congratulate yourself for your own achievements. Whereas I remember years ago auditioning for some American thing, and the casting director had said to me, you know, American actors peak at the audition. And I'm like, if you peak at the audition, what's the point in doing the job, right? Because then you're not learning.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a thing with America where they say, we're great first.
Yes.
And then they get great. Whereas here, there's a lot of really brilliant stuff. And you ask someone if they're good at it and they'll go, I'm average.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, I don't like to say too much. So
do you think that comes to the way parents treat the children? They sort of squash them a bit. They don't know, which I think has changed a bit now. But I think things have moved on.
I do.
A bit.
I think it's a cultural thing. I do, really. Because you do that. Like, we were backstage and I was like, oh, Clive, you're marvellous. course I'm going to come. You're marvellous. And you're like, oh, no. You're like, well, but you are.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
You asked about being Scottish. I've just been doing a show called Me, Macbeth and I, and in an expanded version, I talk about my parentage. And when I was on telly, so this is a bit, you know, going off-piste a bit, but my English mother-in-law, whenever she saw my show, she would always say, oh, I like that. I like that thing in it. That guest in it. My father literally never said, he only ever said, I didn't like that tie you're wearing. That was a very rude joke you did. Surely, there's a true, but it's, I think funny, but so, but he did like my television. I know that because his friends told me at his funeral.
Oh.
So that, and I don't mean that to be sort of, because we had a perfectly good relationship.
No, I totally know what you say because you're
it just
right.
wasn't the way in Scotland. I don't know if Scottish people here will commit to.
I wrote so much for Radio 4 at one point, you know, because they do the pay scale on how many minutes you write, right? And I was one grade under Harold Pinter, right? I'd written that much under it.
Yeah.
And my mother would phone up and she'd say, what are you doing? And I'd be like, I'm doing this new thing for Radio 4. And she'd go, ugh, do you have to? And I'd be like, what? And she'd, nobody up here listens to Radio 4. Nobody cares about Radio 4. Can you not do a lovely wee thing for Radio Scotland?
Yes.
You know, but then actually she listened to everything. It's that thing about don't get cocky. It's protection.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Number three, though, where do we go with this? Thursdays is your wonder of the...
I love a Thursday. Thursdays are the Christmas Eves of the week. Thursdays are brilliant. They're brilliant.
Well,
you know what
applause.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
They're the Christmas Eves of the week. Because the
days I've never heard people praise Thursday. There's lots of songs about Mondays, Sundays, Saturdays.
People are idiots.
There's a David Bowie song about Thursday's child. That's the only one I could find. And I couldn't think of it. Why? Well, you and the applauder in the audience are the only two people...
Because, right, days of the week have personalities, right?
Yeah.
Even in, there's a thing within stand-up where people talk about Fridays and Saturdays being different. And actually, I previewed this show in LA and I was doing a Friday and Saturday and I was like, I wonder if it'll be even here, like it is, you know, in the UK. Fridays are kind of rambunctious, right? Those are the nights where, like, you'll get the audience are mouthy and everybody's a bit like, oh, it's Friday. And then Saturday is couples night and everybody's out for the evening and they wanted to have something that they can tell people about on Monday. So it's kind of sedate. Sunday is laundry day, like, that you either, like, are cleaning out your liver or cleaning out yourself. Monday is miserable.
Yes.
Tuesdays are awful days. Tuesdays are the worst days of the week.
This is just for entertainers or,
no,
or for everybody? Okay.
Statistically at Tuesdays, if you looked at the statistics for Tuesdays, you wouldn't go out, Clive. You would not. They're like the things that happen on a Tuesday, and I'm not going to tell you because it's. It would be
I play football every Tuesday night. You think that's bad? Then I'm
I do.
Running risk.
Change it to a Wednesday.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
Because a Wednesday, midweek, and then Thursday is like the Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah.
Because you've already had half a week, right? You've like If it's been a bad week, you know you're coming to an end. If it's been a good week, you're moving into feeling good about yourself, right?
Yeah.
And then and you're coming up to the weekend. So I love a Thursday. I think Thursdays are the most underrated days. Whenever I get to a Thursday, I'm like, in fact, this is a Thursday.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes.
Technically. Although I think it might be a Wednesday because I'm still halfway over the Atlantic. Oh, with
okay. J-Lag. All right.
Have you never thought about the personalities of the days of the week?
Not in this way, no. And I think I've done about 70 of these programs, and no other day of the week has been mentioned, I don't think. Or
that
any
surprises
period of,
me. Yeah, nobody's yeah. never mentioned Tuesdays.
No.
I can't believe that. Honestly, even my kids, right? Yeah. My youngest kid will come home and he'll and I'll say, "How was school?" And he'll be like, "Well, Tuesday." Right?
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes you'll see that Tuesday moves because yeah. if you don't get a bad Tuesday, then Wednesday yeah. will be dodgy.
So are your kids American now? Do they speak like
they
Americans?
Are
Do they behave
American.
Like Americans?
Yeah. One of my eldest kid is working on the front of house at the Gilded.
Oh, right.
Which is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a funny thing to see because I'm like, fly off, little bird,
yes.
into the dangerous world of entertainment. But I'm also like, what are you doing? When are you home? Have you eaten? Have you got a vest on? Like, I can't leave him alone.
Yeah. Okay, Thursday. I don't think you need to expand any further on Thursdays. No. I think you've made your
sensible,
case.
Sensible, right?
Yes. Yeah, well, yes.
Move the soccer. Look, that was the. I was talking about Lulu there. Move the football from the Tuesday.
Yeah.
To the Wednesday.
I don't play on my own. I've got dozens of other people that...
Just tell them.
Yeah.
Honestly, look at the statistics for
yes.
Tuesday. Talk to them about it and they'll have that sorted out.
I've had lots of injuries.
Out.
That's true.
Right.
We all do.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on to your next wonder, which
that?
Is love.
Yeah.
So you go from quite quirky, I'd say, choice of Thursdays to love, a huge topic. I don't know why we've never had a wonder of the world, love.
Has nobody ever said
no,
love
No, I don't
either.
Think so.
Clive, who are you talking to, my friend?
I'm talking to smart-ass comedians mostly. So
right.
they.
There you go.
So anyway, love.
Yeah.
So expand on love.
For so many reasons.
Sorry, I'm just going to have a wee drink.
Because you don't have to love. Like, it's not, you don't have to do it, but you do. Like, I landed and got off the plane. My brother-in-law picked me up, went to my sister's. She made me my dinner. And then I had a shower and she'd sorted out a really comfortable bed for me and everything because she loves me.
Mm.
She didn't have to do it, but she does.
Yeah.
And the thing about all of the, as many intellectual people as there have been throughout history, the one thing that people can't seem to define or understand is love, right? They'll like try and write about it and then they'll go, well, it means this, but it sort of means that. It probably doesn't mean that on a Tuesday, right? Like they'll move it about. And the reason I think it's a wonder is I think it's very undervalued.
Yeah.
Because if you ask most people or if you're talking about, you know, asking yourself on a dark night of the soul,
yeah.
like one of the things that you would look for is more love, to feel loved
yeah.
for someone to love you. And yet we diminish it and we are peddling in the news hate and
yeah.
misery all the time. It's like love it's like the unimportant sibling or something like that, you know.
Well, even in drama or novels or anything, the bits where people are in love and it's all contentment and lovey-dovey, you can use that expression, it's quite small because immediately you want to get on to, oh, it's a happy marriage. No, some adultery is breaking out.
Right.
Or falling in love with the wrong person, or there's a conflict because you shouldn't love that person.
Yeah.
Or the wrong age is the wrong side of the tracks or whatever. We don't tend to make that the focus of our
drama. And there's so many different colours of it too. Like one of the things that we were talking about that like backstage, that the last time I saw Clive, right, we were doing a show at the Museum of Scotland and you arrived and I was like, how are you? And you went, oh, and I said, what's wrong? You were, my wife has got her bike stolen.
Yeah.
And you were like all concerned about your wife and was she going to be all right, and then you were like, all right, I'll do the show. But that is love. That's like an illustration or something, which is you don't have to be concerned about your wife losing her bike.
It's an expensive bike, Lynn.
Well, I know. You love the bike.
Yeah.
But, you know, like,
yeah.
it's that I think the thing that I would like to celebrate it more because it's all the little beautiful things that people do for one another that I think we should focus on more rather than all the shitty things that happen naturally.
Yes.
Right? It's like more of a Thursday, less of a Tuesday, right? In terms of emotions.
Yeah, that tells me, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about love between siblings you started with, but, you know, a man and a woman, a man and a man, woman and a woman, but and more generally, more you know, loving your neighbours, loving your friends, loving everybody else.
There's, again, I'm a bit Debbie Downer, but, like, when people, there's, like, after the pandemic and everything, a lot, the suicide rates really rocketed. Mm. And also, and I guess maybe I think about it more because my sons are 16 and 20. Yeah. And the suicide rate for young men is horrible, right? And actually a whole load of depression and isolation and whatever, what the problem is when people think they're not lovable, that they don't deserve love, that they have nothing to offer. And I'm like, this is like really not true. It's not true. Like everybody has something to offer. Even Selena Scott, damn it, has something to offer. And I think that if we were more in a place where we would celebrate people's sort of lovability or the exist, I guess love exists where hope exists. And if we were in a place where we were more at home with love, then perhaps that would help a lot of people who feel unlovable.
So have you considered stop writing and becoming more of a religious leader?
No.
That you could spread this message? Or even a politician, I didn't mean
that. No, I can't do that because politicians just talk shite all the time and not even in an entertaining way.
But you could be one who didn't do that. You'd be one who spoke for love.
Do you know, I feel with a lot of politicians that it's the reason that they're doing it is because they can't play the guitar.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, especially in America, I have to say, because I look at, do you know of Marjorie Taylor Greene? Have you heard of her?
Oh,
she's completely bananas. She like talks about Jewish space lasers and all that stuff.
Oh,
she's nuts, right? But I look at her and I'm like, if only she could play the guitar.
Yes.
This would be, or had some discernible talent, even the tambourine. Would work, right? None of this shit needed to happen.
Yeah, it's supposed to be show business for ugly people, isn't it? That's what they've said about politics.
Do you know what I mean?
But Tony Blair, who had made a, you know, I know he's I'm part of a big success as a politician, but the argument is if the band he was in, Ugly Rumours, when he wanted to be Mick Jagger, if that had taken off, he'd have been doing that. He would never have gone into politics. So
See, maybe that if we had sent more love to him and encouraged him in his musical journey, we would all be a whole lot happier.
Well, who knows? Who knows? So that's love, which is obviously a very big a big thing is to make it as a wonder. And it's a wonder because it's marvellous, but is it a wonder that it exists at all?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like chickens laying eggs where you're like, how does that even happen?
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, you know, I met my husband. My husband was the worst one-night stand I ever had because we've been married now like 24 years. And sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'm like, are you still here? But like when
hang on, you've just been espousing love. You've now described your nearest and dearest as the worst one-night stand ever.
Well,
and what are you still here for?
Worst because it was not one night, but like when I met him, I told him I was a dentist because I didn't really want... Nobody wants a relationship with dentists. Sorry, teeth people, but it's not the way of things. So I told him I was a dentist because I was like, I really want to stay single. And then, you know, stuff happened. And then when I met him for our sort of proper date, I remember walking... I got out of the station in Embankment and I was walking up this street and I saw him standing waiting outside this bar. And it was the weirdest thing where I went, oh, it's you, right? It's always been you. Like all that other stuff that I was like, all those guys that I dated and stuff, they were all meant to be rubbish because it was always going to be you. Yeah. And weirdly, he had the same thing. So I do think it is like a magical thing. And do I love him? Of course I love him. But is he an arse sometimes? Yes. And am I too? But like I can't explain what it is other than it's a huge It's a the human desire to connect and feel belonging, I guess.
How long into your relationship or even your marriage did you tell him you weren't a dentist? And it's no good him banging on about his molar giving him problems. There's nothing you could do about it.
Do you know, actually, within the first 6 weeks, he'd been at 3 film premieres and he knew.
Can't all be about dentistry.
No, they weren't. There was not that
Marathon
many.
Man
he'd done. And, I'd taken him to Chicken Run, and my brother had, I think, Saving Grace, and I'd also done this terrible movie called Honest with All Saints. Do you remember the All Saints?
Oh yeah.
And I had a terrible Australian accent, and it's awful. It's an. Yeah. In fact, I now forgive. As I think about it, I forgive all bad Scottish accents because what I did for the Australian one was hellish. Yeah. But that's how I knew that he loved me. Because if you can watch the person that you're dating on a big screen doing a really bad Australian accent and you still want to go out with them.
Yeah. That's not usually the major thing. Oh. But to be honest.
If you ever get the chance to see that film, you'll look at it and go, no, he should have dumped her. It really was bad.
I should have watched it in preparation for this discussion. No. But sadly, I skipped over that part of it. So that's love. Your fifth one was stories. So I think we've covered stories. Yeah. Your whole thing really is about stories. But just tell me about the show you're doing, because it's, again, you get somebody on and talk to them about stories.
You don't do that anymore. No, you ruined that.
I'm sorry, I didn't. I refuse to take responsibility for this. Just tell us what you do.
I do story, but I do story in lots of different ways. So I do story like where I do like sort of moth type story because I worked with them. I do a story where it's a little stand up-y. I even tell a story from a book, which is a real story that I pretend is not a real story, but it's a real story. And it is about, I want people to consider their own stories. Mm. I had a thing about, when I started working on Storyland, I wanted to write something because everybody that I knew, every person that I knew was struggling with something. And it felt like everybody was just a little broken, including myself, right? Because we're all like trying to work shit out, but all of us have got this kind of thing. And so I thought, what I'll do is I'll do a lovely wee piece of fiction where I can write something and say, it's okay, you belong here too. It's not just billionaires and guys with big cars, like you matter. When I tried to write fiction, I couldn't do it because I realized that we're being told a fiction all the time, which is that you don't matter. And people like Elon Musk are better than you. And you're like, no, he's a dick. He's not better than me. So what I did was I put a lot of stories together to try and structure this because I want people to consider their own stories.
Okay.
That makes it sound like a lecture, doesn't it? It's not a lecture.
No,
it's okay.
No, that's good. But we've got to move on because we're going to run out of time for your sixth wonder is cooking.
I do like cooking.
You love cooking, yeah.
I do like, well, only because I found out when I came to America, right, when I went to America, that I could, somebody gave me the Shish Mahal curry cookery book, which is magic.
Okay.
Shish Mahal is a restaurant in Glasgow, and there's loads of spelling mistakes in it and everything. Yeah. But, like, they tell you basically to make curry the way you fancy. They're like, this is how we do it. Do it how you like.
Yeah.
And you don't get many Indian curry in places in Los Angeles. So people would come to my house for curry and then I could get them to like do work for me and stuff like that. And I'd pay them in curry. And I was like, this cooking thing's really good.
Yes.
So like I did a whole series of short videos, where scripted videos. And all these people came and did videos for nothing. Like Alfred Molina and all that. And like Bradley Walsh.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I can't pay you, but I might make you a quiche. Right. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
So I realized that cooking sort of brings everything together. It is a culmination of all of that stuff. It is about love and it is about community and it is about, I've made you something. I made you that thing. I hope you like it.
So you're talking about occasion when you've kind of deployed your cooking for career development or whatever, but just in a normal way, if you're at home, there's maybe your husband, a family member or two, child or two, you enjoy that process of...
I do. We become quite self-sufficient, really. And like, I've got chickens. My husband keeps bees. I grow vegetables. So, like, before I came here, we had this peach tree that was, like, just going a bit crazy. So I had gallons of peach jam.
Yes.
And then when I go back, it's marmalade season.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Right? You know, marmalade season, although not on a Tuesday.
And, well, it's kind of January here, isn't it, for marmalade season? So is it a different time in Los Angeles?
Well, it depends on your tree. It depends on your citrus.
Oh, you're growing the tree, of course. Yeah. We don't tend to grow the orange. You've forgotten about the United
Kingdom,
haven't you?
But that's part of the thing. Like, I think that was... I actually think America changed me in that way, in that we became quite self-sufficient. So I grow vegetables and I grow... You know, like I have figs and peaches and even pomegranates and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
And my husband literally, he messaged me when I got here. And it wasn't like, oh, how's Edinburgh? Are you going to be all right? He was like, you'll never believe it, OMG. And I'm like, what is it? And he went, harvested 40 pounds of honey yesterday. I was like, yeah. No, he loves his bees.
So this sounds like this is an idyllic thing. I mean, Los Angeles to me conjures up, you know, freeways and cars and people all trying to jostle to get into films and TV thing. But you're living in some sort of farm or small holding or allotment area. I don't know what it is with you.
I have brought Cumbernauld to the Los Angeles area.
It's Millport.
It's Millport. God, that's right.
Millport of the West.
No,
yeah.
I think it's that thing. If life is experiential, which is what it is in the end, right? We're all only here for a blip and then we're gone.
Yes.
Then you try and find the bit that makes you happy, which ultimately comes back to story, which is think about what it is you want and then go find it.
Now you've got one more wonder we've just about time to do, which is your seventh, puppets.
Puppets?
Puppets.
Yeah, what's your problem?
And there's no problem with this. This of all the ones you've selected today is the most sort of relatable in a way.
Yeah.
So puppets. What are we talking about? Punch and Judy on the Beach?
All puppets.
Or the Muppets?
All puppets. Yeah. No, I think that it's one of the brilliant things about the human race is that at some point somebody picked up something and went, I'm going to pretend this is like a dog or a rabbit or something. And actually, when me and Craig used to do puppet shows underneath a bridge by a motorway, don't even ask. Yeah. Safety was not a thing.
Yeah.
But we would do puppet shows with my dad's socks. He had these really bad socks and we'd put buttons on for eyes.
Right.
But no matter what information you have to, like, say, if you do it with a puppet, it's always all right.
Yeah.
But there was and sometimes I do this thing that's a secret. But like if somebody's really annoying me, I imagine them as a puppet.
Oh no.
Yeah. So there was a woman in Heathrow, this woman, and she BA, very shouty, man. What happened to him? It's not British Airways, it's bad fucking attitude. I was like, what the hell? And she was like, take your case to my colleague, right? And I looked at her and I was like, she could be a squirrel. It's like just a squirrel, right?
Yeah.
It takes the sting out of stuff. And in years, my youngest son had, he still does have actually this puppet called Neil the Seal, which is a seal that's got like moving things and everything. He always loves Neil the Seal. And it's just a really funny looking puppet. And when, this is quite a sad story. It's not a sad story, but it's not a cheery one. When I've talked about it before, I had cancer. I don't have cancer, but I did have cancer. And there was a bit where I'd had surgery just on early December and it nearly killed me. Like, it really was not a good thing. And my youngest son was 9 and he was like, you are not to do this. You are not to do this again. You can't go here. They must not touch you. He was like really angry about it. And I had to promise him that I wouldn't have surgery again, even then knowing that I had to, right? It was horrible. So all of the stuff of handling everything was fine. And then in the January, we were queuing up for this surgery and I was like, fuck, I can't, you know? And he brought Neil the Seal through and we were doing selfies with Neil the Seal, right, on the phone. And the thing about Neil the Seal that's remarkable is that he can look adorable and terrified at the same time, right? So we were doing these selfies and laughing about them. My youngest had really wanted a dog but couldn't get a dog because I was sick all the time. And we were doing these selfies and we were laughing and everything. And then the selfie, happened, and he was laughing so loudly. I thought, now I can tell him. I can tell him.
Yeah.
And I said to him, honey, I have to go and get surgery, but it will be the last one. And he turned to me and he went, I am just never going to get a dog, am I? Right? But without the puppet and without that happening, we would never have gotten there.
Mm.
And I think that there is a thing about, it's just something that's brilliant about the human race, really. Mm. Who thinks that when you go, oh, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a sock, I'm going to put eyes on it, and then it's going to be a snake. Yeah. It's like a brilliant thing.
Do you know, I once interviewed Gerry Anderson, no relation to me, you know, from Thunderbirds and all that kind of thing. So he was a wee bit grumpy, I'd have to say. But I said, oh, okay, so you must really love, you know, puppetry. You ever remember Thunderbirds? They used to make, the sets were made out of little sort of cheap things.
The strings,
they put
so,
the strings, and there were, you know, Penelope, was it Lady Penelope? Wasn't it? What was the Parker? All that.
Captain Scarlet.
Yeah,
wasn't
all
he,
that.
Captain Scarlet.
They're fantastic. Everybody loves this. He said, so you must really love me. He said, no, I hated it. I wanted to be a film director.
Oh.
I did puppets to show that I could direct films. Then I wanted to use people and sets and things that I never was able to do it. I said, all right, Jerry. We all enjoyed your career, but he didn't.
I guess it's that thing about, well, because also the thing with them was that I really loved the music for that, like Captain Scarlet and all that. I didn't really love Captain Scarlet and Lady Penelope because it fell into that whole girls don't really do anything and guys wander about rescuing everybody. But it had brilliant music.
I've got another puppet example that I'd have throw into this discussion because near me where I live in London, in Islington, there's a theatre called the Little Angel Theatre, Angel Marionette Theatre, they called it. And it was run by a couple called Wright, Mr. and Mrs. I can't remember their first name, Mr. and Mrs. Wright. You know, John and Lindy Wright, I've got it written down here. And one of their children was Joseph Wright, except he's called Joe Wright. And he is the film director, Joe Wright. So he directed Atonement and Anna Karenina and The Darkest Hour and all that kind of stuff. So he learnt, he wasn't sat down and taught it, but he would go every week, presumably, to see every show that they put on. It's still going, but so that's a good example of puppetry.
It is a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
I think it really is a brilliant thing. Even I had thought about the puppets. I nearly went for, you know, the shadow play thing where you like, because that's in the same thing for me where you go, who was it thought that they would do that with their hand and go, look,
a
rabbit,
cave,
right? Because I think that's magic.
Yes. Okay. Well, puppets is a perfectly charming example. A very interesting list, if I may say so.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What was the weirdest for you? Was it the Thursdays?
Thursdays stuck out as a... I mean, I think love stood out as a... But I have to select the wonder of wonders, the wonder that I think is the absolute... And I mean, love is a great one, but that seemed almost too big to be a wonder of wonders in this list. And they're all good. But I think, just in tribute to your childhood and mine from a distance, I'll put in Millport on the Isle of Cumbria to make that your wonder of wonders.
Thank you.
Lynn Ferguson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.